Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello and welcome back to the show. Today is episode 635, and I am really excited to have my good friend Kathy Adams here with me. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Erin. I am excited to be here as well. Thank you for inviting me.
It is my pleasure. I can't wait for our chat today. So I will do the formal introduction for you, but it feels kind of silly because I would love to do my own. And I think I might add my own at the end. So let's just do the formal one. Kathy Adams co-hosts the Zen Parenting Radio podcast and is co-founder of the annual Zen Parenting Conference. She is a social worker, certified parent coach, former elementary school educator and yoga teacher who is a forever student when it comes to breathing and mindfulness. Kathy teaches in the sociology criminology department at Dominican University, and she lives outside of Chicago with her husband, Todd, and their three daughters. And I might also add that Kathy is the author of the soon-to-be-released, among three other books, but the soon-to-be-released Zen Parenting, Caring for Ourselves and Our Children in an Unpredictable World. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for that intro.
Sure thing. And so here goes my informal intro. Mm-hmm. I want my listeners to know how much I love you, Kathy. Oh my goodness. Kathy is the person who I turned to when I had a little mini crisis years ago in my career, and I was feeling a little bit burned out. And a colleague suggested that instead of a new career, which was unfathomable to me, perhaps I needed to focus on a different audience. And so that led me to an enthusiastic and aggressive search for what my path might look like. And I remembered that about a year prior, you, Kathy, had mentioned being a parent coach on your podcast with Todd. And I said, let me go and see if I can find out where Kathy went to school. And of course, you had your PCI logo there. And I immediately went to the website, talked to Gloria, and started about 3 weeks later or so. Wow. So that is, I am forever grateful to you for helping me. You didn't even know it, but indirectly helping me to find my future path and what I was meant to, the way I was meant to serve in the world. So that's my informal intro for you.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
Sure. Very exciting. So today we are here to talk about your upcoming book, which will be released 4 days after this interview drops. So that's going to be very exciting. I can't wait for it to be born into the world because it is just wonderful, as all of your books are. But what would you say makes this particular book different?
Well, the obvious difference is that the first couple books I wrote it more, I'd say that they were like essays, like every page or every couple pages was an idea or a concept or something I had worked through. And I wrote about something usually kind of personal and how I worked through something. And the self-aware parent too. And what is my third book called, Erin? The power...
of positive. Oh, it's on my bookshelf.
Oh, funny.
Oh, my goodness. Where is it? Living what you want your kids to learn.
Thank you.
It's right on my shelf.
That is, I really did write that book, people. But yes, Living What You Want Your Kids to Learn is that they are all in that format. They are all written with, and Living What You Want Your Kids to Learn was kind of everything that I had ever written put together. So it's kind of a bigger book. And all three of those books were also pretty much self-published. The third one, I went through a small publisher, but pretty much it was kind of hybrid. You know, I still had a lot that I had to do to get that book out there, to get it edited. And so this book is different in that it's actually a chapter book, you know, like where I'm talking about overall concepts rather than just my story. And I also went through a traditional publisher this time, which is why it took a lot longer. I think I started this book about 4 years ago.
Wow.
So yeah, the process is completely different. Like with self-publishing, I would write a book or put it together and I could get it out, you know, in a couple months if I wanted to, if I really worked hard enough. Where this process is more of a team effort, and it begins with a lot of rejection. You know, not everybody thinks your book is right for this time, or it's not right for them, or there's too many that are similar. Like there's a whole, there's so many reasons why, you know, there's a lot of picking and choosing when it comes to the right book at the right time. But I ended up with a wonderful publisher. My agent was so helpful, and it's been a great process. So here we are 4 years later, and this and Zen Parenting is coming out.
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. And you know, you touched on two things right there that stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. We, and this speaks so much to what you're always talking about anyway, but we often want things to happen in our time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And when they don't, we think something's wrong. We're frustrated. Oh, I have to revamp the whole thing. We think a million different things to justify or try to understand why it's not happening in our time frame. But when I hear you talk about this book, I just immediately know that 4 years ago, it wasn't the right time for these concepts to be born into the world.
Exactly. And that you have to find, you know, part of the reason I wanted to go traditional publishing is that self-publishing is a wonderful process and I loved it. And when I did it, it's exactly where I wanted to be. I wasn't really doing it for a wide scale kind of, you know, that a lot of people are going to get it. I was doing it because I was teaching. I wanted to use it in my classes. I wanted to use it with my clients. So there's a whole different reason for getting it out there. For right now, what I wanted to do was I wanted to work with a team. I wanted to have people say, this is not what we're looking for. Can you go this direction? Or can you try and say something different? I mean, honestly, what I always say to Todd is I was ready for the rejection. I was ready for people to come and say, you know, this doesn't make sense to us. Can you make this sound this way? And I was ready for that challenge. I don't think when I first started writing, I know for a fact, I was not ready for that kind of input because I was still kind of figuring out the way I saw things. So I wasn't ready for other people to question. I mean, that's just the most honest way I can put it. Where now I love having a team, you know, I love having people say, you know, challenge me a little bit, not necessarily in the ideas themselves, but how to get them across to people so they make sense. And so that they land in a way where people can feel it.
Well, that's such a good point. And I love how you came back to rejection because that was my point number two. How many times do our kids struggle through rejection and they think there's something wrong with them or they're a failure or they disappointed us or they disappointed themselves?
Absolutely. And it was a fun experience to go through with my kids because I started this process at the end of my oldest daughter is now in college, but she was a freshman in high school when I started. So they kind of watched me go through the process of getting an agent, which wasn't easy, of having other people edit my work, which wasn't easy. And then the rejections that came from publishers, like it became kind of like a joke every day. I'd be like, girls, you ready to read my, I'm going to read to you my rejections today. And they were always lovely. They were things like, this is wonderful, but you know, we already have our slot of, you know, parenting books for this year or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And what I was showing my girls in, first of all, I was just kind of having that release myself, honestly, just to kind of share and have some humor in something that isn't easy. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to demonstrate that that didn't mean that I was done. I mean, there was no, like, I knew that, just like you said, there's a right time, there's a right person. And as my agent would say to me, one yes, Kathy, that's all you need is one yes. And so it's the same, you know, to your point with our children, that sometimes they try out for things or want to be friends with a certain person or, you know, whatever it may be. And it might not be the right fit for them, but it has nothing to do with them personally. It's just, they're just still finding their place. And sometimes they have to be kind of pushed out of one situation so they can get into the right situation for them.
That's such a good point. I was just talking to my daughter yesterday, actually, and she is a junior in high school, and she has been trying to decide if she wants to continue playing volleyball in college. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard decision, where for my son, it was an easy decision. He knew 100% that's what he wanted to do, and he went after it. For her, she's weighing, you know, do I want to commit all that time, because she's super engaged in her studies and she loves learning, and, you know, so she's debating all these different things. And prior to our conversation yesterday, I was thinking that she was leaning maybe towards not playing because she wanted to prioritize her education, mm-hmm, and not have anything distracting her from that. Or that she just didn't like the sport quite enough to commit to it for four more years. Mm-hmm. But then yesterday, what I was surprised to discover was that she was unsure if any coach would want her on their team.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't about, do I really want to play? It was, what if I want to play and nobody wants me? What do I do then?
Absolutely.
And so that led to a really different conversation than what I was thinking we would have when it came up.
Mm-hmm. Do I put myself out there and risk my own mental wellness and my thoughts about myself and my skill level? Because, you know, high school and college is so different. You know, you can play a sport in high school and be really good, and then when you get into the college world, it looks different. Mm-hmm. And I think you know, I'm sure that'll be an ongoing talk for the two of you.
Oh yeah.
But as I'm feeling what you're saying, it's like one of those things. It's kind of similar to book rejection things. Like, if you want to play, and there will be a place for you, and you may have to work really hard, maybe harder than you have before, to find some time to play and to learn the skills necessary, but it is out there. Mm-hmm. It just may not be as streamlined as it was in high school. Mm-hmm. So she really does have the choices, but it may look different in how it's implemented. You know, it may just be a different process, high school to college, but there will be a place for her if she wants it.
Yeah. So that's kind of the spirit of what our conversation looked like. But it was interesting that fear of rejection was like peeking its little head up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super easy for our kids to fear that. I mean, it's easy for us to fear it or be uncomfortable or maybe not prepared to face it. But I think for our kids who are just forming their identities, like you had said, you weren't necessarily ready to face that rejection when you were a young writer, new writer, mm-hmm, because you hadn't formed your identity solidly enough to withstand the rejection. That doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It just means the time or the place isn't a good fit.
Yeah, it would have affected me negatively, where it could have caused the worst possible outcome, which would be that I'd stop writing. Right. It's very similar to the podcast when Todd and I do a podcast, and I'm going to use Brené Brown's language around this since it's research-based, but, you know, when we're talking about being vulnerable about something, you're not necessarily vulnerable with everybody about something. You're vulnerable with the people who have earned the right to hear your story. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I come on a podcast, it may feel like, for people who are listening, that they're getting a lot of personal insight in you know, to Todd in my life, but there's nothing that I talk about that I haven't already worked through. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to come on with some like new issue or new challenge or something that I haven't come to peace with, because if somebody has something to say about it, that's okay, because I know where I am. I have like a foundational sense of being with it. But if I'm coming on vulnerably and saying, I don't know how to feel about this, I don't know what to do about this, then other people's input could really harm me. So it's a real, it's like a self-protection thing. You know, it's really a self-awareness. Where are you with this? Is this really ready for everybody? Or is this something you want to continue talking with your partner or your therapist or journaling or working through it before you make this kind of like a public declaration? I think about that all the time before we go on the show. Like sometimes Todd will suggest something and I'll say, oh, I'm too raw for that. Like that's not, that's still like, I'm still working through that. I don't want to talk about that quite yet. And he totally gets it, and vice versa. He feels similarly.
Well, I can definitely vouch for that, because I've listened to you guys for years and years and years, and I've heard you many times discuss things and talk about how you've worked through it. And now you're ready to talk about it. And even I've even heard you say, allude to some issue, but we'll talk about that once I feel more solid about it and more sure.
You know, Aaron, the most recent one like that, because you and I have discussed this, you know, off podcast, just through email, is like my daughter going to college. I've gotten a lot of emails from other people about how you're feeling, what are you doing? I don't have a lot of commentary about that yet. Like I'm fine. She's good at school. That's the base level. But to be able to talk about the process of your daughter going to college, I don't have that fully conceptualized yet. I don't, and will I ever? Probably not. But what I mean is I don't really have all the language yet where I feel like I could completely write about it or talk about it, because I'm still in it. And so it's when anyone asks my, they're not necessarily asking my advice, but they want to hear my story. Like, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm fine, but I don't know. Like there's so many pieces to it, you know, the shifting in dynamics of the home and you know, all the nostalgia and all the, you know, looking, it brings up a lot of mortality issues. I mean, it's everything, like everything. Where you're like, where am I? So I know you understand that, you know, we've talked about that, where I'm just not ready to have a big show about when your kid goes to college. Cause I don't know.
That's such a good point. That's really true. I can say for myself on that college topic, I was pretty lost when my son's a sophomore now. When he went last year, I felt very lost, isn't quite the right word. Just something just wasn't like, I couldn't put my finger on it. Something just didn't feel quite settled. And I knew that it was related to him leaving for college, but I couldn't really define what it was. And I just kind of, I remember feeling like I have too much time on my hands. Mm. Not that him as a senior in high school was taking so much of my time, because he had his own life, a job. Well, it was the pandemic, but it wasn't like he required so much of my time, but I felt like suddenly I had an obscene amount of time on my hands and I didn't know what to do with it. And I thought that was so weird. And oddly enough, the thing that kind of like reset me unexpectedly was a spur of the moment trip. The four of us minus him, took to Boston last October, right before Halloween. We had a lovely time. We biked around the city. It was COVID, obviously, so we ate outside. We walked everywhere. The only reason we went in was to use the bathroom or something, but it was a lovely trip. It was a weekend. And when I came back, it was like everything was right in the world. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, and you know, you're saying like, I'm thinking about you saying you know, it felt like you didn't have as much to do, or like, and I think about that as terms of my headspace, because when you have children, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, however many children in your house, you've created this headspace around how much time, energy you need to allocate toward each. It's never the same. It's always like depending on what they're going through, but I totally know what you mean about it. It's not necessarily that we were actively doing things, but our headspace required us to think about them. Like, you know, with JC, it was like, is she home yet? Is she, you know, I'm checking in to make sure she's home. Do you need anything today? You know, on Sunday, do you want to go out to lunch? Do you, like, I had this certain amount of headspace where I built her into the equation of my day. Mm-hmm. And then when they're not here, you're like, there's like this open headspace where I remember the first week, Aaron, and I, you know, I'm only about 2 months out or 3 months out, but where I was like, do I like check in with her to make sure she's home at night? Like, you're really trying to like separate, where you're trying to switch your role, you know, of like, who am I in this relationship? And we're still, you know, figuring that out, because then I've gone too long without calling her and she's like, hey, and I'm like, oh, wait, like, I don't want to be too distant and I don't want to be too, you know, available, because she's doing her own thing and I don't want her to even worry about what's going on here. I want her to focus on her life right now. So it really is a process of reintegrating, like a new reality, like integrating a new reality, and everything is going to, like, the pieces are going to fall into a different place. And it's a process. So I love that you did something kind of big that like created a new, I don't know, like a new structure for you, where it was like the four of you most of the time instead of five. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Like, we don't actually have to dissect it. Just, I'm glad that it was helpful.
Yeah. And I didn't really come up with the idea because I thought that it was going to help me feel more settled. I just came up with the idea. And then I was so delighted that it had this wonderful, unexpected effect on me. It was great. Yeah. But I think one of the other things, now that I look back on it, that makes the transition challenging, especially when you're trying to be as aware as you can as a parent, it's trying to redefine how much contact you have with your child. And it almost feels like, not that you have to do it without them, because you certainly can take their input, or you can talk ahead of time or early on what kind of contact feels right for them. Is this too much? Is this too little? But it's almost like something you also have to do on your own, and knowing your child. Does my child need to hear from me more? Do they need to hear from me less? What is working for them? What's working for me? How can I let go and not cling because of my own need, but let them have the freedom to figure this new phase out, but let them know I'm still here.
Exactly. Like, and we get so much practice doing this, because, you know, don't we do this when our kid goes to preschool and then kindergarten, and then when they're in fourth grade and middle school? Like, there's all these phases where we have to renegotiate exactly what you were just describing, where how much do I need to be available versus how much do I stand back and not be so available, not to, because when I'm saying not available, it's not that we couldn't be there if they needed us. It's that let's not even put ourselves in their way. Like, let's see, let's allow them to have a day. Like, for example, it's so much easier to talk about it in specifics. My daughter's home right now from fall break. So she's upstairs relaxing, you know, resting, sleeping. And even with her at home, like, I want her to decide, you know, she wanted to see some of her friends from college the other night. So she went out with them. And during the day, I want her to decide what she wants to do. Like, you know, I want the home to be exactly what it was for her when she was here, which is the safe place to land, the place she can be, where she can be herself, and that she doesn't have to be, she doesn't have to think about what's going to make my mom and dad happy right now, especially as an adult, especially as an 18-year-old. This is her home, and I want her to feel like she can make her own choices within this home. Like, and we've been developing that and, you know, working with her on that her whole life. So it's no different. Even when she's home on a break, there might be expectation of, hey, let's take my mom to dinner, and she would love to do that. But for the most part, she is an adult now, you know? So it's like, we have to interact in that way more as peers than as me being the mom and saying, here's what I want you to do today. So it's just a shift in dynamics. And I think we do that every stage of their development. This is just the most significant shift that I've felt.
Mm-hmm. It is a significant shift, to be sure. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think about, we were on a college tour, my son and I, a couple years ago, and one of the people who was speaking at the tour said, kind of jokingly said, we will make sure your kids understand not to put dishwashing liquid in the laundry, in the washing machine. Totally. And everybody kind of chuckled. And he said, you would be surprised. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, we as parents really do have a lot of work to do mm-hmm. to prepare our kids before they leave our house to be ready to leave our house. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that effort is really checking in with ourselves, trying to be aware of how we're showing up. Like you and Todd are always talking about too. How do we give them what they need without giving them too much or more than they need without stifling their independence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it's the irony about what you just said is that really sometimes the way we teach them before they leave our house is by not doing too much for them while they're in our house. So it's like the self-awareness piece is allow them to have an experience where they don't know how to fill up the car with gas, or that maybe you showed them once or twice, but they don't remember. And then they have to navigate that and they have to figure out, how do I do this? Where's the little switch that opens? Like, how do I pay for it? How do I get my credit card in? Like, instead of explaining everything to them, allowing them to have some experiences. Like my middle daughter, who's 16, she came home last night. She had to work late and she came home. She's like, I got my first parking ticket. And I was like, you know, it, to no fault of her own, she had to work. It was sitting out there. It just is the way of things, you know, mm-hmm. but now she's got to figure out how to pay that. And of mm-hmm. course, if she was like, Mom, can you get me to the right website or whatever? It's not that I won't help. It's right. That's her thing to do. And her ability to walk those steps and then ask for help when she needs it is how kids learn to do things. You know, that's, we're there, but not to there. Mm-hmm. We are supportive, but not to the point of where we're doing it for them. It's this, I mean, Aaron, I always talk about this. I say this in the book too, like it's a balance beam that they walk on, where we kind of have to stand outside the balance beam and like put our hands up and kind of be there in case they fall, but they really have to learn to balance. And this is not easy, because they do fall off. And when they do fall off, sometimes we have to be as there and supportive as we were when they were little. Because sometimes our kids, even when they're older, they need more hands-on help to get back up on the balance beam. But then once they're there again, we have to back up again. It's such a unpredictable, uncertain process. There is no direct line, and the only way is through. Like it's so funny that I write parenting books or even talk about these things, because I have no answers.
Right.
Like I have no like absolutes. It's just this like constant navigating the day-to-day experiences, stepping back, moving forward, and it can be really uncomfortable.
Yes, it can. Mm-hmm. Last weekend, I took my daughter to New York City mm-hmm. and everybody else, all the other ones were traveling. One was on my younger son was on a Boy Scout trip. My college son was visiting his friend in Connecticut at his school. My husband was at a comic show. And so I took that opportunity for us to go and visit some colleges. And when we left, I asked her, she has her learner's permit, and I asked her if she wanted to drive home mm-hmm. out of New York City, out of a parking garage, through the city, through the tunnel, onto the turnpike, to drive home. And before I asked her, like the idea came to my head, but before I let it come out of my mouth, I checked in with myself. Do I think she's ready to navigate the city? Do I think she's had enough sleep? Do I think she can handle everything that's going to come at her? Mm. And ultimately I felt like, yes, I think she's ready to do this. Mm. And I asked her, and she at first said, oh, I don't know. Should I? Do you think I should? And I said, I wouldn't be suggesting it if I didn't think you were ready. And mm-hmm. so she took the keys, we got in the car, and she navigated. Well, I navigated with the map telling her where to go, because that's just one step too far, I think, totally. For where totally. She is.
A lot, yes.
It's so much. And before we pulled out, I just said, remember, you know, there's going to be pedestrians, bikes, cars, everything that you can think of, it's all going to happen. And when the light turns green and you think it's ready, it's time for you to turn right, you have to remember that pedestrians will also get a green light. So they'll be crossing the street and you have to give them the chance to get out of your way before you automatically turn. And so I tried to give her all the basics to be prepared, and she did great. But it really took a tremendous amount of me making sure I was comfortable and ready to not be freaking out when she's driving, and to really feel like I do think she's ready to handle it. And she did so well. And if I had been too afraid and kept her from that experience, I wouldn't have built, you know, solidified her confidence.
That's right.
But if I had not really believed that she was ready and given her the chance anyway, and a disaster happened, that wouldn't have been helpful either. So I think, like you said, there's no formula, there's no recipe. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of showing up every day, every moment, every kid, every situation. It's all going to be different. You'll see some patterns, but there's going to be an errant thing with a different set of circumstances that's going to change how it usually is when this happens.
Exactly. And when we decide, okay, I'm ready for something to happen, and we give our kids that freedom, them knowing that, first of all those things you said are true, then they feel more confident because we feel confident. That self-awareness piece is essential. And then also, if they so choose, if your daughter's like, she navigated through New York and then she was just about to go, you know, she was just about to take the next leg, and she's like, you know what? And she pulled over and she said, okay, my energy is like at top speed right now. I feel good about what I did, but I want to call it a day right here. That's still a success, you know, like that. I mean, driving is such a good example. It makes it so literal. Like, I'm going to drive this far and then now I'm going to take a break. That I think sometimes we, especially in this society, we view bravery or confidence as, did you win? Mm-hmm. Did you go all the way through? Did you do everything you said you were going to do? And we also have to allow for this space of, I did as much as I could in the moment and I feel pretty good about it. And now I want to like kind of sit in that before I take the next step, whatever it may be, you know, like, you know, it could be something as simple as, you know, having, you know, right now I just want to wear clip earrings and I just want to play with that for a while.
Yep.
Before I, and, you know, we just sometimes as parents are so ready for a next step, or we desire them to take a next step. You know, I don't know about you, but I hear from a lot of parents that I'm coaching, you know, they're so worried about their kid's confidence and they wish their kid would be more confident. They wish their kid would do this and move forward. And I always take that parent when I'm talking with them toward their own confidence about, are you doing these things too? Because, and it'll look different in your life than it does in your child's life. But sometimes we're pushing our kids to be confident to make us feel better. There's like this really weird roundabout, like, if you take steps forward, then I feel better as a parent, versus we are two separate people. I'm going to support you in the steps you take, but in my life, I'm going to take risks too. I think we sometimes get to this point in life where we think if we're a certain age, we don't have to take risks anymore. We're done. And that's where a lot of our depression and anxiety and you know, kind of discomfort with life comes in, is when we're not living anymore. So it's like, you know, just, I'm just envisioning you driving with your daughter and she did make it through and you felt good about it. It's like a beautiful example. And then at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, in your example or anybody else's, if she pulled over and said, okay, I feel good, but that's enough for today. And I know you, Aaron, you'd be like, great. You know, like, that was great. You know, next time we'll continue going or practice the same skill, and that's okay. Like, that's a win. That's what I'd still call a win.
Well, you must be a fortune teller or a crystal ball reader or something, because that's exactly what happened.
No. Oh my gosh.
I am telling you. She made it through the city. She did great. She said, this isn't nearly as stressful as I thought it would be. She drove through the tunnel. When she got through the other side, she said, oh my gosh, driving through tunnels is very nerve-wracking because it feels so skinny and I have to really stay right in the middle. And I said, yes, I know. And then going through that very slow bumper to bumper traffic turned into highway driving at 70 miles an hour, because 65, because that's what the speed limit is. And so she had to immediately shift gears. Oh, I have to merge now. And there's no more red lights and there's no more 25 miles an hour. And so she kept driving. And when the first rest stop was coming a couple of miles ahead, she said, "Do you feel like driving now?" And I said, "Absolutely. If you want to pull off, go ahead. We'll go to the bathroom. We'll get a drink. If you want me to drive, I will." And she said, "I just feel like my mind is so on fire right now with what I just did. And I feel really good about what I just did. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to ruin it." I said, "Amen. Absolutely."
Yep. Yeah, that's it. And that is like allowing, not only are we viewing that as a success and we realize that that's exactly what she needed in the moment, all true, but we're also talk about like a life skill that you don't have to always try and go the whole way, whatever right. that means. You don't have to stay out all night. You don't right. have to make sure that you do all your work in one day. Like, it is a life skill to learn how to discern what's most important right now and what I need right now and what I can do and what I can hold and who I can be. And that's, I think, a more important practice than fight till the end, you know, because that's not good for our nervous system, our overall well-being. We may do that occasionally mm-hmm. and we may have to, and that can be great in itself, but that is not a typical way of being on an everyday basis. So I love that story even more now. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
Good for her.
And you bring up a good point, which I now have to tell her when she gets home today, that it is a metaphor for life, that you don't have to push through to exhaustion and falling down and falling asleep behind the wheel, God forbid.
Totally.
You can take a break when you need it.
Yes. Love it.
I love that too. And so one of the things that I wanted to go back to that you said that when a parent is saying that they want their child to be more confident, you encourage them to look at their own confidence and what are they doing to build their own confidence. And I think that you really weave that message through the book very well, where you really keep encouraging parents when they want something for or out of their kids, have they looked to see if they're building that in themselves?
Right. And there's, you know, it's twofold. Number one, because then you'll take your hyper focus off your kids so they don't have to be performative for you and that they don't have to be someone different or someone that you dreamed that they should be instead of allowing them to be themselves. You know, like that really basic level of the more that you focus on yourself, the less pressure you're going to put on your kid. And I also feel like there's a really important part of when you are going through, you know, like our kids are in school every day. They have to deal with the socialization, the pressure of grades, the pressure of whatever activities they're in. And when we're going through something similar, if it be through our work or with our friendships or maybe a new hobby we're trying or a new experience we're having, we can really relate to what they're feeling. And so instead of meeting them in this hierarchy of I'm going to talk to you about what you should be doing, we meet them more on a peer level of like, oh gosh, I'm having that feeling too. How do you deal with it? And so you are learning alongside them, and it allows you to be, and you, and I'm saying you, us as parents, we've been through enough that we know if it doesn't work out, we're going to be okay. And we know that, you know, trying new things is good no matter what happens. And so we have a different overall big perspective that we can offer to our kids. But I think they can hear, I know, I'm not even going to say I think, they can hear us so much better when they know that we understand what they're going through. Maybe not in the exact same way or with the exact same friendships. And in no way should we say to them, we're having the exact same experience you are. You know, like we want to give them space for their own life and not say that we know everything about it. But if we're having similar feelings that they're having, we meet them in a different way. We meet them in a calmer way. We meet them in a less like teacher judgment way. We meet them more like in a compassionate way, which is kind of, you know, the whole gist of the book was my intention was to help parents recognize that if they focus more attention on themselves and what they're doing and how they feel and their own history and their own experiences and their own trauma, et cetera, they will naturally better meet their children with what their children need. Like it's like a win-win. You get to focus on yourself and find your own sense of beingness and your own sense of feeling comfortable in the world and that you belong. And then when you have those feelings, you understand your child so much better. And there's so much language for this. Like this is not new. These things I'm talking about, these are not new concepts. I'm just trying to find new language to explain that if you're doing things for yourself and having your own life experiences, you will show up better for your children, and your children will hear you and stay connected to you. That's, you know, and it, but it's a process and it's a practice, because not every day is the same.
No, no 2 days are the same, I think.
No.
So I think we would be doing a disservice to not touch on parenting in the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the reason why your book was not ready to be birthed 4 years ago is because now it needs to be in the world.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing in terms of parenting in the pandemic with the people that you work with, the parents that you work with?
You know, I think the thing that became most obvious, it wasn't a new thing, but the thing that became most obvious during the pandemic and this ongoing experience we're having that's constantly unpredictable, and, you know, we're having to negotiate or deal with new information every day, is that it really comes down to mindfulness. It really comes down to, are we paying attention to this day and this moment and doing what we can do within our locus of control and focusing our energy here? Because I think previous to the pandemic, a lot of our joy in life, or what we thought was joy, was about planning our vacation 2 months from now, or was about, I can't wait until 2 weekends from now when we have this party, or I can't wait until your graduation or your, you know, choir performance or whatever it was. We were always kind of pushing our joy to the future. Mm. And I think one thing that the pandemic taught us was that that's not always guaranteed. And that even though that made us feel good, it's almost like, you know, people who are so excited for their vacation, they anticipate it, they plan for it, and then they get there and they realize that they are there on vacation. Wherever you go, there you are. And that they're having the same challenges while they're right on vacation. And then they get exhausted from their vacation and they can't wait to come home. So we're constantly like trying to find joy in this external way, mm-hmm, versus, and I'm using the word joy. I could also use contentment. I feel like happiness is more of a feeling word, but mm-hmm, it's like we're trying to find this sense of peace and belonging, contentment in external things that are in the future. And I think the pandemic taught us that you kind of have to, you have to find it in your daily, ordinary, moment-to-moment experiences. And I think the secret behind that is that, you know, all the great teachers of our time, the poets and all the, you know, behavioralists, and they knew that that's the only place that contentment lives, you know, mindfulness experts, you know, and that's really what Zen is about too, is even the, there's no definition to Zen, by the way. It doesn't have a final definition. It really is just living in the unpredictability, with a sense of paying attention. That's really all it is. And so it's the Zen experience of, you know, paying attention to this day and being with these people in front of you and eating this food in front of you and finding the contentment in that, rather than thinking about the restaurant that you're going to in 3 weeks. So that's what I think the learning has been from the pandemic. And I knew that once we started to go out again in the world, that a lot of that would get lost, because then we start going back to old patterns. Mm-hmm. You know, our neurobiology has some really strong patterns. Mm-hmm. And if we've been using those our whole lives, it's what we're going to go back to on autopilot. But if we can remember the practice of sitting at home, you know, all together, watching a show or being by the fire or doing things we never used to do together, that's really where we felt connected, right? And mm-hmm, so it's like, how do we bring those experiences or pay attention to those experiences from here on out, pandemic or when we're in a more typical state of being?
Mm-hmm. Such a good point. I was thinking about last Thanksgiving. As last Thanksgiving was approaching, I was really wrestling with whether it was safe to have our family over. Mm-hmm. And we usually have about 12 to 15 people. It's not huge, but it's not small. And indoors, that wasn't really feeling right because no one was vaccinated. We couldn't be, it wasn't ready yet. And so I wrestled back and forth. Oh, maybe it'll be okay. No, we shouldn't. Yes, I think we can't. No, absolutely not. But then we miss Thanksgiving. Oh, we'll do it later. You know, just constant considering. And what we ultimately decided to do is buy two space heaters, you know, with the big lid hat on top. And we said, you know, we're going to have, first we were going to try to have it in the garage with the door open. And then we thought, well, no, because that's still too confined. We'll just have it out back. I'll give everybody blankets for their lap. They can wear their coat. We'll have the heaters on either end. And so that's what we ultimately landed on. And it turned out that, oddly enough, here in New Jersey, it was probably 60 degrees or 65 degrees that day. So by the time it was dinner, a couple hours later, it was probably 58, 59, 60. And we had the heaters on and people had light jackets on, but that was it. And we had the normal family members here and everybody was able to sit around. And we actually loved that experience so much that we decided we want to try to have it outside whenever the weather will allow us to.
Oh, I love that. And that story is probably the second most important thing that I think is very connected to mindfulness, is being able to adapt to a new situation and create something that's meaningful. And that thing, sometimes we get really stuck on traditions for a good reason, and that they bring us, you know, there's some nostalgia and there's some, you know, cultural traditions that we want to maintain. Like, we definitely have traditions in my home too, but we can sometimes adapt within those traditions, pull some of that into it, and also create something new that end up being even more meaningful. And you literally created a new tradition because it kind of felt like, oh, I'm being forced to do this. And yet it was one of the best things that ever happened. So, you know, the ability to be mindful and adapt, I think, are probably the top two, learnings. I mean, I'm sure we could throw out a bunch more, but two of the top things when it comes to what we learned in the pandemic.
That's a good point. I think the people that I can think of who struggled the most were the most resistant to adapting.
Same.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
There was a lot of anger about, I don't want to have to change anything I'm doing because I feel comfort and in what. So it's like, you know, I'm thinking from a therapeutic perspective, sometimes we find comfort in our day-to-day experiences and our routine. And this is how we feel grounded. Like, the whole first chapter of Zen parenting is about that, you know, chakra one and feeling grounded. And sometimes being grounded comes through a predictable routine. Mm-hmm. And then when that predictable routine gets taken from you, there are one of two choices. Either you fight against it or you adapt, you know, and sometimes, to your point, some people use their energy to fight, and sometimes there's little things that can get done in that process. It's not all, again, this is all gray. So it's not like if you fight, it's bad. It's just, can you, kind of have a blend of both, where there's some things that you accept and adapt, and there's some things that you say, no, this is something I know I really need to continue doing, you know. And it goes back to what we've been talking about the whole time. Are you aware? Are you aware of why you're making the choices you're making? And are you also taking into consideration, this is a big part of the pandemic, other people? I think that was a big thing that came up during the pandemic is, yes, we have our needs that need to get met and we have our own families, but we are also part of a community and we are part of a global community, and we have to consider other people, that it's not just about our home. It's about everybody. And that was, I think, a big awareness as well.
I think so too. Well, I think that everyone should run out and buy a copy of your new book right away. Like, as soon as you turn off this podcast, please run to your local bookstore, maybe if you have one. And if you don't, run to wherever you can find it, because it is delightful. It's eye-opening. It's such a gift to bring into the world at this time when the world so needs it.
Well, thank you, Erin. That's beautiful of you to say. I appreciate it. And, you know, the easiest place to go is zenparentingradio.com or Zen Parenting Book, both of them, either place. And there's, just like you said, you can get it anywhere. So if you like your indie bookstore or you have a specific place you want to go, you should be able to go there, but also the bigger sellers will have it as well.
And we are also going to be doing a giveaway for a copy. Yeah. So just send me an email at erin@erin-taylor.com, because as of when we're recording this, we don't know when I'm going to have the book in my hands, thanks to our global shipping issues, which mm-hmm. will be cleared up in time. So just send me an email, and then in a future episode, I will let you know more of the details of how you can enter to win your very own copy. So thank you so much, Kathy, for joining me today. I really loved our chat, and I think it was really, it really brought some value to my listeners. And I hope that everyone gets a copy of your book.
Thank you, Erin. I loved being here. I appreciate the work you do in the world. Thank you so much. And I look forward to talking again sometime.
Fabulous. Me too. So that wraps up today's episode. Wherever you are in this world, I hope that you make it a very mindful day for yourself. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.